Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Set Lusting Bruce, your podcast all about Bruce Springsteen, his music, and mostly his fans. I am your host, Jesse Jackson. We're kind of sorting getting off the Bruce train, though not really. To pull the curtain back, I, on a fairly regular basis, get emails from different record companies or publicist house that say, blank has a new record. And they talk a little bit about it. And would you want them a guest on your podcast? And this one had a Springsteen-ish sound. I was like, oh, what? Let me do. Brian Stephen, I told you before I hit record, I have listened to the first two singles off your album. So you are not here just because you happened to, your publicist said Bruce in the thing. But welcome to Set Lusting Bruce, and I can't wait to talk to you.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, so glad to be here.
All right, we'll go alphabetical to start, and then I'll flip it back and forth. Brian, why don't you start us? Tell us a little bit about yourself. And then we'll let Steven do his elevator pitch, and then we'll get into some other stuff.
Sure. So yeah, Brian K. Pagels. I was born and raised in Freehold, New Jersey, as most of your listeners would know, hometown of the boss. And I spent my formative years there, including learning my first instruments. I started out on pots and pans, banging on some pots and pans. I was a drummer first. And I eventually progressed to the drum pad, the snare drum, the drum kit, etc. Around the time I was 13, I picked up the guitar. I was still living in Freehold, and my dad had played some guitar, and I taught myself some chords and went through one of his classic rock songbooks. And fast forward to college, I started playing my own original music, actually in a duo. I have a lot of experience in duos. I've been in like several over the
years.
You're
very monogamous.
I am. It's true. And so, yeah, I started playing in a duo in college with my good buddy Cameron Snap, who encouraged me to start performing the original material that I was writing. And that's where my, you know, journey as a songwriter really started. And here we are today, living in the Washington, D.C. area, just outside of the district in Alexandria, Virginia. And a couple years ago, Stephen and I, who have been friends for quite some time, but just a couple years ago, we started this project, Brian K. and the Parkway.
Yeah. All right. So, Stephen, how about you?
Sure. So I grew up in the Carolinas, and I'm going to try and mask my Southern accent as much as possible. And I really grew up I know we're going to talk more about this, but I grew up on the 80s. And eventually, I really actually loved Hungry Eyes by Eric Carmen. May he rest in peace. And really wanted to play saxophone in part because of that super dirty sax solo on that song. And tried out for saxophone in the fifth grade. And I just like really sucked at saxophone. And so they threw me a pair of drumsticks, and that was it. So I played in a ton of bands, did a lot of touring. Played a lot of cool places, played a lot of empty rooms. Eventually ran into Brian, tried out for his band, bounced off of that and started doing my own thing. And then we played a bunch of shows together and I fell for this guy watching him play. And I was like, man, we need to make a record with you because not only did I play drums on our album, I also produced it, which producing is probably my first love at
Oh,
this point.
okay.
And so Brian and I finally agreed to get this going and here we are. It's been a great ride so far. We're just getting started.
Bruce Bochy, the manager of the World Series Texas Rangers, just thought I'd throw that in from Dallas, made a joke that catchers are always the best athletes on a baseball team. Are drummers always the best? You both started as drummers. Are drummers always the, is that one of
Ooh.
the best ways to start your musical journey?
Ooh, I hate being in a band with another drummer. I hate that Brian is sometimes like, hey man, play this. And I'm like, his parts are always great, right? He's got a great sense of musicality, but I feel it every now and then, especially when I can't get the beginning of Badlands right. Like tonight in rehearsal. But I'd say I'm the most jacked person in the band, like
Yeah.
at this moment.
Okay.
Brian's trying to catch up. We're both trying to look like Bruce, born in the USA era.
Nara, okay, yes.
Now I'm a little ahead of him, but I do. The role of drummer is incredibly important to the band to me, and I think one of the things that does help us stand out and actually helps the E Street Band stand out is like the power behind that music. Because a lot of the style of music that Bruce plays and that we play, like no shade, like the drums are not the focus, and the drums
Yeah.
aren't the focus of either of those bands, but they are big. You listen to the drums on Darkness, Born in the USA, especially the
Yeah.
song, right? They're huge drums. And so that's what we are going for.
What I think is interesting is I've had other musicians on the podcast that are not necessarily Bruce fans. And I've had bass players, I've had percussionists. And normally there is a thought that as a drummer, as someone who's a bassist, you just don't understand how good Gary is or how
Oh,
good
man.
Max is because they're not showy. They're just there. And it almost takes another bass player to understand how good he is. And you get that from if you had a Springsteen fan on, of course you'd say that. But to hear other musicians who are not big Bruce fans to give that love is always fun to hear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My intro to Max was actually really the Conan O'Brien show.
Yeah,
Like,
I'm sure
knew
there's,
Bruce before that.
yeah.
But I at the time, I was in high school and I didn't know that Max, the E Street Band wasn't playing and we didn't have
Yeah.
the internet. And I was like, oh, this Max guy was in the E Street Band, but really he's just Conan's drummer. And he's, of course, slaying on Conan, right? Like he's just going nuts all the time.
Yeah.
So when I entered Bruce, I'm like, man, why is he like so chill back there? But he's always playing with that huge power every time he plays, even with carpal tunnel.
Have either one of you read Big Man, Real Life, and Tall Tales that the book Clarence Clemons wrote? Okay, so good.
Unfortunately.
I can tell this story, and you guys won't look at me like, of course I know this story. True story. Of course, one of the premises of the book is Real Life and Tall Tales. And in the hardback or even the paper, the stories that are tall tales, the pages are a different color than the ones that are in that are mostly true. So he tells the story, and Don Rio was the co-writer. And Don Rio was a showrunner of My Wife and Kids. So he had Waylon, yeah, the Marlon Wayans, the guy who co-starred in that. And he had never been to a Springsteen show, so he brought Waylon to the show. And so Don's introducing him around, and they're in the back room, and little Steven walks in. And he's Silvio from The Sopranos. Oh, I can't believe it. And so Don Rios, yeah, he plays in the E Street Band. You're kidding. Wow, Bruce must be a huge Sopranos fan to hire somebody from the show to be in his band.
Oh man.
And they tell that story to Bruce. And Bruce goes, couldn't you just see me? I'm flipping through the channels. I go, oh, I bet that guy could play guitar. I should hire him.
Amazing. That's
Yeah.
great. So
Yeah.
great.
That, I love that story.
Great. I need to read the
Yeah, it's a fun book. It
book.
is a
Okay.
really fun book. All right. You mentioned a little bit, Stephen, so I'm going to stick with you. Growing up in the South, you talked about 80s rock, but I want to hear your parents. What were you listening as a child when your parents controlled the radio and the stereo?
Oh man. So it really was what my dad would do was we had a Betamax, like not a VCR, the one that lost
Yes.
VHS. And my dad would let MTV record while he was at work and then come home and we would watch the videos. And he did that so he could get all the videos, but he also did it so he could skip parts that his children couldn't see. And
Okay.
so to me, like the second verse of Dire Straits' Money for Nothing is just, it's something I've never really heard most of my life. Like I didn't see that as a kid. Like half of Material Girl is like a mystery to me because we would just watch those videos. A lot of Huey Lewis in the News, Dancing in the Dark, definitely on there. So we would watch that at night, and I was like 4 years old, and that became my like thing. Like that was like the thing I loved to do more than anything in the world. And I was just going around singing Talking Heads. It was like
Yeah.
True Stories era. And it was just so much stuff that was ingrained in me that I like came back around to as an adult later.
Yeah.
And then we'd get in the car with my dad, and it's just like country. I don't know. It was like car was for country and like home was for like Betamax 80s videos.
Okay.
I resisted country like all the way up until high school. But yeah, that was what my parents listened to. And we had some LPs too from 70s stuff, but we didn't
Yeah.
dip as much into those. But yeah, it was really wonderful. And me and my brothers, we all came away just like loving music because
Yeah.
we had the videos. You're a kid and you're just like seeing crazy stuff, that Cars video where he's like a giant bug. Like all that stuff as a kid, it's magical. And so it was really effective for me.
Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here, taking a break from listening to a little Shouted Out Loudcast episode. Love Tom and Zeus talking all things Kiss. Of course, I was listening to them on my new Raycon wireless earbuds. They have quickly become my go-to earbuds because of the comfort. These soft tips are the best I've ever used. And at this price, plus a Pantheon discount, Raycon is really hitting on all marks. Sound quality is great too. I really love having these three EQ options because I like more bass in the music, but less in my podcast. 8 hours of playtime for the battery is great as well. Surround sound, noise isolating, and awareness mode are all included. These are great earbuds. Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon. Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here. Another day, another podcast I'm working on. This time, it's Famous and Gravy with Amit and Michael. I want to let you know that I loved the Factor Meals package so much that I re-upped for myself, and then I sent a package to my in-laws. Like I was with my first shipment from Factor Meals, the in-laws were as excited to try one of the prepared restaurant-quality meals. Well, they got the shipment to Protein Plus meal plan and were very impressed. See, being in their 80s, anything to make the meal prep easy is a plus for them. They heated the oven per instructions and minutes later were enjoying a very delicious, nutritious, and dietitian-approved meal. One big win for me. But what really floored them? was the taste. Like I told you, it's surprising how good these meals taste. Restaurant quality indeed. And like my own shipment, it really was everything Factor Meals said it would be for some seniors. No prep, no mess meals. Factor Meals are 100% ready to heat and eat. Take it from me and my in-laws. Head to factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. That's factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. Thank you, Factor Meals.
Yeah. How about you, Brian?
My dad was a huge Beatles fan, so we had a lot of that. He had basically all their LPs, so we would listen to those on vinyl, and he eventually got the CD copies of those as well. My mom was a Stones fan, so we had that sort of fun dynamic going on in the household. There was a lot of crossover. They weren't like extremely, it wasn't the sort of thing where like they refused to listen to the other band. You know?
Did they like have this fight about Stones, Beatles?
Only like jokingly. Okay. It wasn't like a real thing.
Yeah.
Like in real life. It was never a real rivalry.
Yeah.
So we had that stuff going on. But we also had, there was like a lot of Motown in my house growing up. I'd be curious about this. You would know because you speak to a lot of people. I think that in a way, it is a Jersey Shore thing. There's a lot of households that I knew had a lot of sort of 60s and 70s, like R&B and soul. Sure. Mixed in with their rock collections.
Yeah.
And so we would listen to that stuff a lot, and I'd go see the Temptations and the Four Tops and those acts at what will always be in my heart, the Garden State Art Center, not the PNC Bank Art Center. So there was a lot of that stuff, but my parents were pretty varied in their musical tastes. They introduced me to a lot of classical music the time I was young as well. And my mom like loved Luther Vandross. There was a variety of stuff in the house. I think probably the main point of intersection in our upbringings might have been actually Huey Lewis sports.
Yeah.
Because that was something that was like ubiquitous in my house.
That brought in the soul and Motown
stuff,
which we definitely listened to. I think when my mom was driving, we put that on the radio. But my dog is actually named Huey Lewis.
Nice.
And so pretty big through line there. But yeah, that's a huge one. And it did combine all of those things.
Yep.
I know you guys are very busy getting ready to tour, rehearsing. You've got an album coming out, but have you had time to watch the Netflix Greatest Night of Pop documentary?
Oh yeah.
Absolutely.
Yes. Totally.
Huey Lewis, first off, I love how Bruce comes across, but Cyndi Lauper was a superstar, hearing her tell the story. And I thought Lionel Richie was hilarious talking about writing in Michael. But Huey Lewis, like, why the hell am I here? Just was
that
great.
That moment in that song for him was just, it's incredible. That's the highest note he could sing. Like, it has to be. And that's such an incredible moment in that song. Yeah. It was so cool. As a producer, I was really into how anxiety inducing that documentary was, like trying to pull that together
Jones.
And with all those egos, and it's just, he's incredible that it was not a total disaster. I know that opinions vary on the song. I personally love that song,
and I certainly don't, if someone says that do they know Christmas is a better song, I'm not going to argue with them. I graduated high school in 77, so this 84-85, I'm in my middle 20s, where we'd gotten MTV. It just, that is a time capsule. In fact, as I'm recording this, I had two of my friends join me and we talked about the documentary. And it's a time capsule of people. And what's amazing is the amount of people when you look, one, how many we've lost, but two, their career. One of the guys who joined me on the discussion is from Canada. And so he brought up Canada, Tears Aren't Enough, their version. Hey, like, we've got Gordon Lightfoot, and we've got Neil Young, and we have Corey Hart. Corey Hart, who the F is Corey Hart? And he said, but there is very few of those in We Are the World, right? Nothing against Kim Carnes. I guess that would maybe be, but everyone else is just someone consistently. So yeah, I thought Huey was great, and I agree. I I thought that was wonderful. Stephen, I often ask people that grow up where in the New England or that Jersey, they usually can't remember when they first discovered Bruce because it was just always in the atmosphere. So growing up in the South, those separate. So both of you guys, let's throw that on there and then we're going to talk more music. Both of you, can you remember when you first heard Bruce and what about his music spoke to you?
Can I do when I first really heard Bruce?
Yes.
All right. I dabbled in Bruce. I'm going into my early 20s, right. Discovered the albums. And it was years later. I would have already met Brian.
Yeah.
When this happened, which was about 10 years ago. And again, I'd listened to it. I liked it. And it was July 4th. And I was like, just chilling in my lazy boy, cracked open a beer. I'm like, I should watch something on YouTube. And so I pulled up Hammersmith Odeon 75 for Bruce. And of course, Thunder Road starts. And like halfway through, it was like a lightning bolt hit me. Like I went from enjoying Bruce to like manic fandom in like that one song. And then of course I sat there like transfixed for that entire performance. And that performance, something about it, that was like really pulled me in. And I think for me at that time, it was the immediacy, the urgency of that band. I didn't know the whole story that like Bruce didn't really want to be there necessarily. And he was ripping posters off the wall. Like, I didn't know any of that. I just saw this band just rushing this set, and I cried. Like, I was in tears. I was like, this is amazing. And my wife at the time, I think she walked through and just rolled her eyes at one point, which is not an uncommon occurrence. But normally I was like playing video games or something that happened. I was just a mess. And from there, it was like, on. And I think what I did that was new for me was really hitting the 70s stuff hard, which that really spoke to me because musically he was doing that progressive soul. And that really made me feel a lot of different things musically. And then lyrically, I think he spoke to a part of me growing up in the South, actually. The working man voices are different. You're like Pickup Man with Joe Diffie and great songs that I love like that, but like not Bruce's like poetic, eloquent discussions of kind of the plight of like people like my father who grew up a farmer. And I think it just made me feel more connected to the world I came from, which has always been an issue for me. So yeah, this guy from New Jersey is like teaching me about growing up in the South and how like I am still that person. And going into my 30s, that was really impactful for me.
Yeah, I love hearing that Road to Damascus moment. I grew up in a Southern Baptist home where, you know, and so let's talk, you know, it's in the, when I have someone from Jersey, they honestly really can say it's in the water, right? If you're the right age group, it's always there. Brian, was there a Road to Damascus moment where it became more than just what everyone talks about and something very personal, or was it always that way for you?
I think there were a couple moments and it was building. At a certain point in my life, I would definitely say it was in the water and whatever. But I do remember having the cassette. So my parents were not like huge Springsteen fans. Yeah. The first album in our household was a cassette of Born in the USA.
Okay.
And so I definitely remember that. I remember listening to it. I remember my mom saying, when he sings My Hometown, this is what he's talking about.
Yeah.
This is our hometown. This is where, and that was really impactful to me.
Oh, I bet.
Even at a very young age. And I remember, I think this is funny. I remember, so I love that album. I listened to Born in the USA on the cassette a lot.
Sure.
It was like that and Thriller for me. Okay. And then Tunnel of Love came out. I remember seeing an ad for Tunnel of Love. And I begged my parents to get me Tunnel of Love. And they refused to get it for me because they said, this album is too adult for you. You're not going to enjoy it. It's not Born in the USA. It covers too many adult themes. And you're not going to get it. Maybe later. So they didn't let me get that album.
Oh my God.
So
now it's forbidden fruit. You're like, oh man.
Now,
what does this have that I can't have?
I love Tunnel of Love so much.
What about Nebraska?
I wasn't going backwards.
Okay, that's true. All the way forward.
What's the next thing? So anyway.
Yeah, bolo tie. It's just too. Yeah.
Anyway, but skipping forward to, I had my first car, which was it was my mom's. She gifted it to me on my 17th birthday. It was a 1979 Pontiac Firebird, metallic blue. I would go cruising down the shore in that, cruising around Freehold, around Monmouth Battlefield and all the local sites. And I had just a couple cassettes with me in that ride. And I bought a couple cassettes out of this like used bin, not a used bin, but like a discount bin,
sure,
at like the grocery store. And one of those like three cassettes that I bought was Greetings from Asbury Park. Now, at this point in time, all I really knew of Bruce was basically Born in the USA and Greatest Hits, because I had a cassette of that as well. And I picked up Greetings from Asbury Park, and it, like, as a 17-year-old, like, driving around all the areas he's talking about in those songs with all these characters, that really blew my mind. I was like, this sounds nothing like the Bruce Springsteen I know, and it's so different, and I love both of them, but this is new and fresh, even though it was much older at that point in time. And so luckily at that point, I only had to wait a year to go see the E Street Band live, because the next year they would reunite. And so it was the summer before I went to college. My buddy and I drove up to the Meadowlands for night 14 of 15, the 14th night in a row they played at the arena. I think at the time it was called Continental Airlines Arena. And we didn't have tickets, and we wound up, like, somehow there were people there from Italy who were like looking for tickets. I felt bad about this actually, but like we wound up like finding a scalper who like gave us a pretty good deal for what these tickets were. We just like, walked up with cash and from our summer jobs, and it was the best money I ever spent. It was such an amazing show. I can speak more about it if a time allows, but I know I'm going on for a bit, but that moment, it was all building to that.
Yeah.
And then that moment was it for me. I was on cloud nine for 2 months after that show. So,
Steven, have you ever seen him live?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Any thoughts?
Oh my God. Actually, Brian and I have seen him together twice.
Yeah.
And that I've only seen him twice. I only go with Brian. He has to take me to see Bruce. It's just what we do. If he sees Bruce without me at some point, something is going really wrong. And so we went to the more recent River Tour. Went up to Baltimore to Royal Farms, which is one of those great arenas that it's older, it's smaller.
It's small.
You feel like you're in a club. And we tried to get into the pit and failed. We stood around all day and our number didn't get called, but we still got an awesome spot on the floor, and it was just unreal. That for me, after having spent, I don't know how many years it had been at that point, however many very intimate years with Bruce, enjoying and like finding out and learning. I'm very much a tunneler. If I get into something, I want to know everything, and I want to experience it all and find out what I like. And so like finally getting to have that experience, and it was such a great show. And the River, like, it's not my favorite, but a lot of it is really good. And then, of course, the like back half of that show was just like banger song.
Yeah.
Banger song. And I was just going nuts. At one point, like, Brian and his wife like disappeared. And like, they probably told me like what was happening. I had no idea. I was just like, whatever. You know, I remember turning around being like doing Born to Run. I was like, where's Brian? I want to give him a hug. And so I was like, oh, he's not here. I guess I'll just like move closer. So when Bruce came around during Hungry Heart, I was actually like pretty close to like the platform and stuff at that point. And it was just, it was incredible.
Yeah.
And it was right around the time that like David Bowie and Prince had passed. And it was just, there was just really something in the air that night. I was really happy to be there and have that experience.
So that tour was, I think, really special for a couple of reasons. One, David Bowie died like right before the tour started. Glenn Frey died during that tour. We lost Prince. And I got to see the show four times that tour. And I felt like they were playing with a joy that we don't know how many more times we're going to get to do this, right? The road in front of us, we know, is shorter than the road behind us. And so maybe we should savor it. So I feel that way. So a couple of things that you guys brought up. First, I love my hometown, the story that's yours. So I will tell an embarrassing story on me. A bunch of my buddies convinced me to go to a midnight showing of The Last Waltz. This was right when I graduated high school, maybe just early college. So we go, and I live in a small town called Lake Charles, Louisiana. And if you know the lyrics to Up on Cripple Creek, straight down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico to Lake Charles, Louisiana. And I'm like, do they change the film strip every time they go? Do they change? Because I had never heard anything from the band. That one. Second, I have said that I feel like most people either have to been in a long-term relationship or have their heart broken one or two times to really enjoy Tunnel of Love. And then every time I say that, some 17-year-old kid joins me and talks about how it's his favorite album, and I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. But do you understand why your parents now said Tunnel of Love was so different than Born in the USA?
Oh, for sure. I don't understand why they wouldn't let me listen to it.
Yeah, I agree. Because it isn't like
we're talking about the Simpsons.
It isn't like George. It wasn't like a Richard Pryor 8-track. We were talking about
like the Simpsons in rehearsal and how like people weren't, and they're still on the air, right?
Yeah.
But like some of the Southern Baptists did not win that battle against the Simpsons.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Badly. I'm just like imagining your parents being like, no, Tunnel of Love.
It's a funny story.
It's really good.
But no, I understand. But, and honestly speaking, I don't know if I would have loved it as a little kid.
Yeah, that would have been a tough, it was tough for me until literally last year.
I probably would have loved the title track because that's just like a fun banger song. But yeah, a lot of that album I probably would not have enjoyed that much because my tastes were more toward more fun loving.
Yeah, sure. I've told this story multiple times on the podcast, but in 1977, I was looking for something to do on a Saturday night. Tells you how popular I was. I went into a Montgomery Ward's, which is a department store. And in the music section of Montgomery Ward's, Endless Summer from the Beach Boys was on sale on an 8-track. And I picked that up, never had heard anything for the Beach Boys, put that in my 8-track player, and my life changed. That was, I'd never heard harmonies like that. I'd never heard that intricacy and fell in love with the Beach Boys and just was buying everything I could find. And I remember buying Pet Sounds and going, what the F is this? What is this? I don't get this. Now then, when people push me, you can only have one album for the rest of your life. I'm going, it's not a Bruce album, it's Pet Sounds. Right. It would be tough, but Pet Sounds would be what I pick. But my ears weren't ready. Right. That's Tunnel of Love. If you go from Dancing in the Dark to One Step Up, it's what? Wait, where'd we go? So,
For sure.
All right. I want to talk. You both have done music separately. So talk and whichever one wants to take lead, whether it's you, Stephen, or Brian, or maybe together. Talk about y'all's origin story. You talked about you've both been in bands. How did you guys decide that you guys are chocolate and peanut butter and these two great tastes go together?
So one of the bands I'm still in is called the Beanstalk Library. And we were without a drummer at a point about 10 years ago or so. And we held auditions. And Steven, who knew our lead singer in that band, this guy Ryan Walker, and Ryan invited Steven to audition for the band. So Steven came in one time to our rehearsal space. We went through some stuff together. Then he left. And then I like never saw the guy again. And I don't remember exactly how much time went by before I did see you. It probably feels like it was a longer period of time than it actually was.
I don't think it was that long.
I don't think it was that long. I'm probably embellishing. But anyway, after that, like just from having met during that experience and then seeing each other as part of the local music scene in the area, we developed a pretty fast friendship. And then we fast forward, we wound up like moving pretty close to each other for a period of time and whatever. And we would just hang out a fair amount. And then, Stephen probably harassed me for about 7 years to make this album. And at first, he had always been framing it as a solo album. He wanted to produce my solo album because he had liked the material that I had contributed to the Beanstalk Library. And when he saw me live, he liked the way I performed, he liked the songs and whatever. And I was always flattered by that, but I wasn't sure if I had a whole album in me and or what that would be like or what I wasn't sure I wanted to do it. And then I had an idea essentially for a concept album, more if you take that term pretty broadly. And I got really excited about this idea. And this was like in like early March 2020, basically. So it was like right before everything shut down in the early stage of the pandemic. And I sent that the first song to Steven, which was the title track on the album Killing the Bear. And I think he was, yeah, this is okay. What else do you have? And so I went back and I dusted up a few other demos.
Lived.
Yeah, some other demos I'd like worked on over the years and whatever. And then I actually wound up writing that period. A lot of people use their time in different ways. And one of the things that I did was I focused pretty heavily on songwriting and actually putting together pretty intricate demos of these songs because I really had a vision for what I wanted them to be. A lot of them arrangement-wise and everything. And so as I worked on each song and got it to a point where I was satisfied, I would send it to Steven and we'd go back and forth about it. I'll drop it there and maybe you can pick up the story at that point.
Yeah, so I just remember that time being like, hey, next month we'll start working on this album. And then it'd be like another month. Okay, maybe next month. And then eventually, which like I consider a good thing is we got to just put the songs aside for like a year.
Yeah.
And like all this horrible stuff is happening around us, right? And we were just
Yeah.
like, all right, we're just gonna sit on this. And then, but you don't ever get to do that when you're a musician, right? You just roll from one thing. I know Bruce gets to do that. Bruce records albums and then just sits them in the can for years and years, right? But the rest of us don't get to do that. We just have to keep making.
Right, exactly.
And so we got to pull the songs out. And we were like, damn, these are good. We should do this. And when Brian said that, I knew it was good because I'm a fanboy. So I'm not the most objective when it comes to what Brian's doing.
Yeah.
And so we took a trip to Asbury Park. There was a museum exhibit going on that Brian's mom actually helped put together in Freehold that had some of Bruce's mediocre schoolwork. Had the recording gear from Nebraska, had the Tunnel of Love ticket booth, which Brian and I have a really cute photo in front of. So we went to this exhibit, and then I love going to the sets of movies where different things were filmed. And we'll definitely do the same for musicians. We went hard with the Bruce landmarks. And so we went to the Born to Run house. We might have gone to his current house. I'm not going to confirm or deny that we might have driven by. And of course, we ended up in Asbury Park walking on the boardwalk. And we got this idea we should find where Bruce and Clarence Clemons met, which that would be like maybe one of the more mythical pages
Sure.
book, which we both need to go read immediately. And we were just walking around trying to figure out where it might be. And somewhere in that walk, and I had thought about this before, should we be a band? But we were such good friends, right? This is if you've had a good friend for a long time and you're suddenly, I might want to sleep with this good friend I've had. It was
Yeah.
like that kind of an intimacy level. When you're a producer, you're like on the outside. You're like not
Right.
really part, and that's your job. And so I was like, hey, what if I play drums and we become a band? And so we were like, that seems like a good idea. And I don't know if Brian just didn't want to try and find a drummer if he thought it was a good idea. But fast forward a couple of months and we're getting together to play together for the first time. It was very much that like first date feeling of like, oh man, what if this is like bad and it ruins our friendship?
Yeah.
Which is like a thing you could ask about this band now forever. What if
Yeah.
we go to someone behind the music on this and it goes to disaster territory? We still be friends, but now we're in it. And that first rehearsal date, like it was pretty magical. Drums and guitar like doesn't sound great, just the two of them, but like
Like the White Stripes
that's
or Black
okay.
Keys or
Look, I don't really like any of those bands, and I'm not supposed to talk smack
Here
in
goes
this
Stephen losing us
podcast.
more fans.
This is one of my worst traits. Those bands are great. I just don't listen to them. I really like bass guitar. And we had an immediate chemistry and immediately we're like pulling stuff together for the songs and like ideas we had. And it went really well. And it was on from there. And Brian and I do have, we're very different people and we have different approaches, but because we have that friendship, we work really well together. And that was there from like day one.
So I'm fascinated by duos, and one of the favorite podcasts I listen to is Penn Jillette does a podcast, and he talks about that him and Teller were not necessarily ever friends. Now he says, if you talk to my daughter or his child, Moxie, because she's gender neutral now, but when you talk to Moxie, she would say that Teller is his BFF forever, the first person that held his kids, built his child's baby bed. But he said it was always about the partnership. And one of the things that is amazing to watch them, because I'm hearing his co-host Matt Donnelly, is they are savage to each other when coming up with an idea, because the idea is the quicker we get a crap idea out of the way, the faster we get to a good idea. So if Teller has an idea and Penn doesn't like it, he says that's shit. And then if Teller can't convince him shortly, they drop it. Same thing. If Penn says, I want to do this, that's crap. They do it because it just, instead of trying to keep people feelings, it's no, it's about the work. Hey, two brothers in arms. How do y'all's relationship? You've got your producer, you've got the lead singer, the guy the band's named after. What's your relationship like? I'm making them laugh. If you guys are watching this only on audio, they are laughing at my question. So I'm hitting a nerve,
It's a
hopefully a
resonant.
funny one.
Yeah, I think we're maybe a little more sensitive with each other than the Penn and Teller example.
Yeah.
I may have contributed a song or two that Steven didn't like, but he never tells me this is like trash and we're not doing this. Like
Okay.
he'll be like, okay, let's see what else we've got. We'll put this one. So we're working on our second album already, and we in terms of songwriting and arrangements at this point, we
Yeah.
actually have the bulk of the songs are written. And we're working through some
And
arrangements
we
right now.
have a whole production team.
We've got we've got
Yeah.
a team. We've got plans in place. But anyway, and yeah, there have been a few demos that my songwriting has kept up pace, which I've been delighted about. But there have been some things that we put on the shelf, and that's a Steven call for now,
Okay.
until I spin off and do the actual solo project, and then I get to play all these songs that Steven rejected, which is fine. I think that's
Yeah.
fine. Because the thing ultimately, if we're going to be in a band together, I think everyone has to be excited about, anyway, the people who are investing in it have to be excited about the material that we're playing on and
Yeah.
that we're spending a lot of time and effort on. So yeah, I think that's fine. And like those other songs don't go away. They're still my
No,
songs.
exactly.
And,
Yeah.
yeah. Yeah.
So the album is Killing the Bear. It's going to be out on March 29th. As I shared, there's two singles available on Spotify and other great places, but I listened to them on Spotify straight through, Wind the Clock. I listened to them today multiple times. I loved both songs. And I'm not just saying that because you guys have been on the podcast. Don't tell anyone, but there have been times when I've had artists on the podcast and I'm like, eh, okay, but we're going to have a good conversation. I really like both songs. So talk to me a little bit about, you said this is kind of sorta a concept album. So share with me a little bit about maybe a couple of the songs and the themes.
What's interesting is that the two songs, it just happened this way. And I think it happened much more for sonic reasons than it did for lyrical reasons. But it just so happened that the two songs we decided to release as singles are two of the more positive songs on the album in terms of the characters in the songs are delivering a positive message. And it's about hope, it's about friendship, it's about getting through difficult times. And both songs combined. And so that's great. And I think the good thing about singles is they can just kind of stand on their own or stand
Right.
as a pair as they are right now. And that works really well. In the context of the album, the way they fit is that the album's really about our inability as humans. Part of the human condition is that we can never really seem to get to the root of our problems. But what we seem to be really fixated on is like doing whatever we can at the surface level. And so we put in place these surface level solutions for better or worse. And so a lot of the songs tell stories of characters who are not necessarily making the best choices for themselves and for others. And it's not in a judgmental way. It's more just, this is what human beings do, right? We make mistakes and we have to learn from them. I think the characters in Wind the Clock and Straight Through are at least on the path to making better decisions and understanding like what's important in life. And some of the other characters that the listeners will meet on the album maybe aren't quite as lucky.
So Stephen, as you're helping to put this together, what are some of the things you're thinking about as you're building this sound?
What's interesting is that because we started just the two of us with drums and guitar, and then we pulled in a band once the songs were really fully formed. We added a bass and keys to our rehearsals. But then when we went in to record, in part, Brian wanted to keep the album secret from everyone in DC, which I like pretty much hated. But this was one of those areas where, you know, I think Brian and I are very willing to disagree. And then also maybe do a thing we disagree with as long as it's not just utterly stupid.
Sure.
And so as a result, like Brian and I hauled ourselves down to Columbia, South Carolina to my home turf and recorded at a studio that I have a really great relationship with. And we laid all the drums and a good bit of the guitar straight to analog tape to get that warm 70s sound. And then from there, it was about really building out what the album would sound like with us as the basis for everything. And God, I thought about everything. I just was assaulting Brian's text chain frequently. I got this idea. Hey, here's a new Google Doc. And producing an album is like that. I think even more so. It was the first one I had done in several years. So my brain was just like, oh my God, we're doing this thing we love. But one thing we talked a lot about and that we really went for is that because it's a loose concept album, we thought a lot about Born to Run, not sonically so much. We actually tried to make this album not sound as much like Bruce, because I think if Brian and I were just left alone, we would just try to be Bruce.
Yeah.
It's just like, it would be very natural for us to do that. We really wanted to push ourselves into some other spaces, but thematically, Born to Run is the story of several different characters on the same night. And while our characters may exist in the same universe, it's not all happening at once, but it's similar in the feel to like how those stories are pulled together. And so we actually talked about Born to Run a lot during the recording process. And we do a song that isn't as much Born to Run as The Wild and the Innocent, where we're like, we really leaned in hard on the Springsteen thing on that song, on Little Fires.
Okay.
And that was another thing we talked about a lot. We're recording, we're like, okay, what would Bruce not do? And sometimes what would Bruce very much do so that we can do the opposite, while knowing that it's going to carry through no matter what we do, like that influence is going to be there. But yeah, and then when Cat Popper decided to duet with us on Straight Through, what we thought about a lot was like, shit, now this album needs to sound really amazing.
Yeah.
And I spent a lot of time in the mix room with my co-producer on the mix of the album. I think more than probably anything I've ever worked on asked because of that reason. So I thought about a lot of things.
Okay. Yeah. So you guys talked about it. What's the plan? There is a lot of music out there, and trying to get it out there is daunting. It sounds like you guys are going to do some live shows. So talk a little bit about it. What's next for you guys?
So we have the first show. We're doing everything backwards. So like Stephen talked about, we recorded the album in secret. The next thing we did backwards. So we basically announced we're a band and we have a whole album coming out before anyone knew what this was or who we were.
Okay.
Then the next thing we did backwards was that we made our album release show our first official live show as a band.
Yep.
So
nice.
So it's going to be a debut of a lot of things that night. So we've got our album release show, which is, I'm not sure when this is going to air, but it's March 29th at Jam and Java in Vienna, Virginia. It's a local show. Pat's actually coming down from New York to open that show. And we also have another friend, Karen Jonas, who's fantastic. Her and her band are going to play second, and then we'll close that one out. So that's going to be a big celebration. Then we'll have a month off from playing, and then we hit the road end of April. We're basically doing an East Coast tour, running through the Southeast first, hitting a lot of spots in the Carolinas, and then ultimately making our way up to the Northeast, corridor and playing Philly, Asbury Park. We are playing Asbury,
Super
and then
excited about that.
Boston, and then we wrap up the tour May 5th in Brooklyn. And so that's the first run. We've just added a couple dates to the tour as well. So we have a couple dates in June. Later in June, we'll be playing Charlottesville, Virginia, and Charlotte, North Carolina. And we're just actively working on booking out the rest of the year. We have some plans for summer. We might very well have a festival opportunity coming up in the fall. And then we're looking into sort of a South slash Midwest Rust Belt kind of run too. And we have a couple of those dates booked as well. So
Good.
we're investing heavily. We've come out from behind the curtain, and now we're like, we just want to play as much as we can, as much as it's feasible
Yeah.
for us to
Good.
play.
I think one of the intriguing things about the coming year that, anyone who like hops aboard the Brian K and the Parkway fandom, which exists currently, but it's small and we want it to grow. But the band is a duo, but we've got some pretty strong voices who will be joining us on tour who we want to fill the band out a little bit. And for me, as we talk about prepping for album two, I don't want to say too much about that because we have this, we've lived with this album now for 4 years in various ways, but it's new to everyone else. But for album two, we want to get that band up so we can go in the studio and record that live, more the River style. And that to me is like one of the more intriguing things, like who ends up filling in those pieces, because the band playing at the album release, they are wonderful, and they are the people, with the addition of our friend Mike on lead guitar, they're the people who played on the album, but they are not in a life position to really go out and go tour. And it's questionable if we're in a life position to really go out and go tour, but like,
We're
damn it, we're
going
gonna do it.
to
We're gonna have midlife crisis tour 2024 and into 2025, and we want both of these first two albums, I think, will complete each other in a way that I think is really cool. We're really antsy to get into that second one and, of course, promote Killing the Bear, which we're extremely proud of as a record, and to see who we meet along the way. We've already been extremely fortunate. Like, you talk about making it in music, like, you need like some money, and good music helps. It's not essential to making it in music, but like, it does help.
Yeah,
And
it
then,
does.
like, you need some luck. And we've had some luck already. And hopefully, it hasn't run out. We haven't used up all of it. But, like, we've had some really, like, cool things that have happened that are not expected. And people do seem to be responding positively to the music. So, hey, things like this are part of it. So, it's like, very much thank you for having us.
No, I'm excited. And yeah, this is, we're recording this a little bit early. But we will release this. I will release it on Tuesday, March 26th. So, as you're listening to this, the album is only 3 days away from being released. I'm going to have you guys talk about where you can get it. And then, if you're in the area, we'll also talk about that before we let you guys again, where they can go see you live. So, we're going to do that in our timey-wimey fashion as we're recording early, but we'll release late. I always like asking, what did you learn, or what surprised you about this relationship and working on these projects? And let's start with you, Stephen.
Oh man. I think what surprised me was honestly like Brian's willingness to deal with Steven Russ as a human on a daily basis, which is, it's probably an experience. Like, I deal with myself on a daily basis, and it's an experience. There are points in the album making process where I'm like sending Brian like 12 texts in a row about the sequence of the album. Like, the songs aren't even done, and my brain is just like, we got to sequence this so I can make all these decisions. And Brian just rolled with, and that is like to his great credit. And also, his, I think one thing we talk about a lot is like our mutual love of music, like not just Bruce. Like, Brian and I just love music, and we do love to like needle each other about the music we both like and might or might not agree or disagree on. Like, we both just love music. We are music nerds. And if you follow us on Instagram, which I of course highly recommend, like, it's just music nerd stuff a lot of the time. But hey, here's this cool band we found. Here's these people we're playing with. They're cool. You should check them out. Hey, here's a thing from music history we find interesting. Like, we both just love music. And so it was really cool to me. Like, I could have predicted that, but to see Brian actually live that, because when I produce an album with people, a lot of it's like very solitary. And then I come back to them with the big idea. But with Brian, I was like, we're in this together. So here's how the sausage is going to get made. And Brian also knows when to like take himself out of the equation a little bit and be like, hey, I'm cool with whatever reverb you want to use on the snare. I really don't care. But of course, I've thought about that snare reverb for the last 3 days, almost every second. And Brian's willingness to go there with me made me feel really comfortable committing more to what we were doing for a long-term thing.
Brian, same question.
I'm surprised at how many cans of my seltzer Stephen can drink.
A lot of seltzer.
Okay.
I got to get something out of this relationship.
No, I guess on a serious note, I was actually surprised that at how good of a guitar engineer Stephen is.
I was surprised too,
because he's never really engineered before.
Nope.
And for a lot of the more intricate guitar stuff, we just tracked in my basement, which we dubbed Parkway South. And real a lot of it was just like me like running a Telecaster or a Stratocaster like through either a Fender or a Vox amp, and just working with those settings to get sounds. And I think we got some really awesome guitar sounds on that record for taking a pretty minimalist approach.
Yep.
And basically having a rookie engineer doing the job.
To be fair, I've assistant engineered like 20 plus albums, so I know a little something, but I was on the spot. Yeah. And I'm sending them to my guy, Colin Derrick in Atlanta, who I've worked with for 20 years now. And we used to have a recording business. And like, I knew we were on when he was just like, man, I'm like really jealous of this guitar tone. And I'm like, all right, we're doing something right. But I really do. I love electric guitar. And I love the challenge that Brian put in front of me, which was, it's really easy to go with that big distorted sound, throw that on everything. We wanted a lot more nuance in the mm-hmm. guitar. We wanted it to rock, but not feel like a guitar album. And so you're going to get some of that in the album songs, some of like that approach. But thank you. I really appreciate that. I surprised myself. It's nice. It saved us a lot of money.
Yeah, that's good. So I'm going to go back. I'm going to have you take off your artist hat and put on your fandom hat again.
Yes.
So you guys have talked about seeing Bruce perform live. One of the questions I'm always interested to talk to fans about, are there songs you're chasing? So Brian, is there a song that you would love to hear Bruce do live that you haven't? And if there's another favorite artist that you would want to bring up instead or both and share, you'd love to hear, I'd love to hear that.
What's funny about that is a lot of the songs I would have thought I would have been chasing, I have miraculously heard. So I'll just answer in that way, because I would have to cross check all my set list to determine like
okay.
what I might actually still be chasing. But for example, I love, Stephen made reference to The Wild, The Innocent, The Street Shuffle. One of my favorite albums. I love that album to death.
Yeah.
And I heard New York City Serenade at the first show I went to,
which
was incredible.
Come on.
And yeah, I know.
Yeah.
But I also heard at that first show, I heard like some other deeper cuts that I feel don't get played a ton. So he played that. They played In Freehold, which is a non-album track, like from Goes to Tom Joad acoustic tour, which was incredible. They played, I don't know, they like opened with Night, which I guess gets played like a fair amount, but that was a song that I like maybe thought I would have been chasing for a little while.
Yeah.
And Downbound Train as well. That's another song that I like love, and I feel like is a bit of a deeper cut and doesn't always get into rotation. So anyway, like that was just the first show I went to. So I've really seen a lot of my favorites over the years.
So we heard Stephen's been there twice. I always like to preface this question. The amount of times you've seen Bruce perform live, not a fair barometer of how big of a fan you are. There are people that have never seen him perform that are massive fans. There are people that just were happened to born in the right time, living in the right place, that may have seen him over 200 times. So for the record, how many times, Brian, do you count?
Yeah, seven. I've seen him seven times.
Okay. So have you heard of the website My Boss Time?
No.
Okay. So Stephen, you're going to be mad at me, because when he should be working on something, he's going to go to that. It's called mybosstime.com. It's free. You set up your account, and then it has every show that Bruce has ever performed. And so you go pick the seven shows you've done, and then behind the scenes, it calculates. Here are your most rare songs. Here are the songs you've heard the most. Here are the songs that when they were personal premieres for you. And so it's a really fun, especially when you get to 30 or 40 shows, you'll do it. I'm at 19 and holding, and it's a lot of fun for me that I was at, he did a free show for the NCAA tournament here in Dallas a couple of years ago, and he opened with Jump. Great because of basketball. And he's only played it twice. So that's one of my rarity songs. So, yeah. You guys, it sounds like you may do, when you're performing live, you may do a Bruce cover, right?
Maybe
Maybe not.
sometimes.
Okay. Nothing wrong with that. I'm thrilled that we've gotten to spend some time together. I really appreciate it. But, Stephen, you didn't answer songs you're chasing.
I really want to see Jungle Land.
Okay.
We got some real awesome songs at that River tour
Yeah.
that we went to. Like, I checked a lot of boxes. And actually, on the most recent tour, which I know there's been some controversy about
Yes, there
the list,
is.
but at our show, they played Candy's Room. Anything Darkness,
Okay.
that is my favorite Springsteen album. And so that was a song that I would have just never thought was going to show up.
Yeah.
That was a really cool one. And we were right behind, man, we were behind everyone. So we
Yeah.
were, it was, that was a religious experience.
Jesse, I've listened to a couple of these to know. I think you are not the biggest Jungle Land fan. Is that
I
right?
am not the biggest Jungle Land
You
fan,
didn't tell me that.
Well, that's okay.
but I know I'm wrong. It's one of those things you're wrong. It doesn't speak to me emotionally the way some of his other songs do. And like when I listen just to the instrument, the music, it's great. The solo, absolutely beautiful, but it just isn't the to me that others are. Now, I was in Houston and he said, I wrote this song over 50 years ago and I still don't know what the fuck it's about. And he went into I Was the Priest. And we
Nice.
lost our shit. Now, my wife didn't. My wife's looking like, why are you guys going crazy? Because it was a bunch of us, some buddies, and we were all like, the rest of us, like, I can't believe, I can't believe it. She's, what? What? Yes.
That's
That's great.
amazing.
Yeah.
It's the sax solo for me.
Oh,
I
it's
want to
amazing.
hear that live.
I've got to tell you guys, I did, this is not a happy, it's a happy memory, but it's also incredibly bittersweet because I did get to see Clarence's last Jungle Land.
Wow. That's a sweet yet. That bittersweet is, yeah, absolutely. You're glad you were there and it's innate, but it is, yeah. That's cool. All right. I feel like we could talk all night. Thank you guys. You guys have
Absolutely.
been so wonderful. You're welcome anytime. And if you are going to do anywhere close to Texas or something, please let me know and I'll drag Linda and we'll go see you guys live. That would be a lot of
Awesome.
fun.
That would be amazing.
Any final thoughts? We're going to get your final thoughts, then we'll do the Mary question, and then we're going to let you promote. So, any final thoughts?
Man, I'm just so glad you do this podcast. And honestly, so we've been doing several interviews like this, and it's just so great to be able to really just let loose and talk about our love for the boss and not have to feel not embarrassed by it, but you're like,
Sure.
oh, like maybe we're talking too much about Springsteen because we have to like cater to a fan base that has broader musical loves and whatever. It's fun to just be able to geek out about the boss. So I'm just really happy that you agreed to have us on.
Yeah, this is I not even just on podcasts, just in my daily life, I like start going in on Bruce. And some people are down, always Brian. But like a lot
Yeah.
of people are just like, oh man, I'm like checking out now. I need better friends, I think. Like I need more friends that love Bruce
So,
as
yeah.
much as I do. But it is really fun. And I will say about anyone listening to this podcast, no matter what you do with the album, because music is so subjective and
Yeah.
I'm supportive of whatever people like, but check out Little Fires because it is the song where you're like, this is Bruce.
Okay.
So it's,
All right.
I love being on a podcast like this and being able to just be like, look, we know we did it on purpose.
So two stories. I was telling you guys, my other podcast is we're going through every John, perfectly good podcast. We're going through every John Hiatt song in alphabetical order. Someone sent a nice email, or they posted on Facebook, like, it's fun, but I'm tired. Jesse keeps bringing up Bruce Springsteen. And my co-host Sylvian said, we're sorry, but that's just not going to happen. And so the next episode, I went all episode. I didn't bring it up once. And she was like, almost, wow, this sounds like another song. I can't think quite who it's from. And I was like, yeah, that's funny. That story. I love you guys doing that. My other story was in his autobiography, Bruce talked about there was a ping pong table behind at the backstage one show, and that the guys started playing ping pong. And when they went to go on stage, they were still playing. They didn't realize they were supposed to be on stage. So that's why they now do a band, like a little circle, almost a prayer before they go on stage. So I'm at a work event, and we had just been bought by another company, and the buying company was talking about that every place they have has a ping pong table. And how that's part of it, and they play it, and they'll often, like, if there's a decision, okay, let's play it for ping pong. So I'm telling the ping pong story, this new CEO, and my old CEO looks and says, you truly can put Bruce Springsteen in any conversation, can't you?
You really can. It's always applicable.
Yeah.
And my lovely bride, I cannot count how many times I've said, hey, Lindy, you want to hear a story? Is it about Bruce? Never mind. We're just going to move on. Thank you guys for the kind words. I'm glad you had fun. I've had a blast. All right. I'm going to do the Mary question, then we'll promote the album. For those of you who may be fans of Stephen and Brian, they're checking out the podcast. Thank you. We are so glad you're here. I end every podcast with the Mary question. Jay Armstrong, who is a retired honors English teacher, but when he was teaching, he would give his students the lyrics to Thunder Road, and he would have them read it. They would study it if it was a poem, and then he would ask his class at the end of the day, excuse me, does Mary get in the car? We're going to start with you, Stephen. Does Mary get in the car at the end of Thunder Road?
No.
Okay. You have to tell me why.
Okay, so I'm currently married. I've been married twice, and I have a lot of friends who are women, and I think were you to start your pass at them with, you ain't a beauty, but hey, you're all right, she's not getting in the damn car with you, no matter what you do after that pass. And this is a beautiful text of a song, some of my favorite lyrics ever, and I've seen people's eyes just roll at that line so many times. And I think it's a no. Maybe she regrets that later, but it's a no.
Okay. Brian?
It's a yes. Because the reason why it's a yes, I think, is because Bruce is like the eternal optimist. Even in his most pessimistic moments, pessimistic albums, dark albums, if you notice, like, they almost always end on a positive, more uplifting note. Sometimes it's like a little, sometimes I guess it could be left up to interpretation, but I think at his core, he is an optimist. And so I think, at least in Bruce's mind, she gets in the car, and that's my answer.
Okay. For what it's worth, Stephen, here is how I explain it. By the way, my wife agrees with you. He called her ugly. No way she got in the car. Yeah. I believe in my mind that Mary often makes fun of herself and puts herself down by saying, I'm not that attractive. I'm not that. Oh, I'm not all that. I'm not that. And so I believe that our hero is doing the sales technique of acknowledging the objection and getting out of the way so that he can continue forward. That is in my mind, he's saying, hey, so maybe you aren't a beauty, but hey, you're all right. And that's all right with me. So that's in my mind, for what it's worth. By the way, you guys are perfect. I used to be 60-40. About 60% of my guests said yes. About 40% said no. But over the past couple of years, it's gotten 50-50. So about half my guests say yes, and about half my say no. So it's almost like we planned it. Thank you for that. Killing the Bear, available March 29th. Everywhere music is available. You guys make your pitch.
We will have vinyl, probably not on March 29th, but if you love vinyl, love Bruce, you can scoot on over to briankandtheparkway.bandcamp.com. Pre-order the vinyl. It'll be in your mailbox as soon as we get our own copies. And if you are on the East Coast, come see us live and spin us on Spotify. That really helps a lot. I personally am not a Spotify fan, but it really does do wonders for us to get those plays and you get to enjoy the music. And definitely follow us on Instagram. We have a lot of fun on there. We cutting up and talking about music. And you get a promotional post every now and then because people like to know stuff is going on. But we really want to build a cool community there. So come hang out with us and chat with us online. And hopefully we can eventually come to wherever you are and play a show.
That's right.
And so Friday night, the 29th, tell us where we can go if we're in the area.
Yeah, if you're in the DC area, or even if you're not, and you just
and you're traveling, yes,
you're like, I've got to get myself there.
Get in the car with Bruce.
That's right. So it's the club is Jam and Java. It's a great little club in Vienna, Virginia, just outside of DC. It's been around for a good while now. It's got great sound, great staff,
great parking lot.
Very easy to get to.
This is what Brian told me. He was like, "We really need great parking for this show." And this was one of those times where I was like, I don't really agree, but okay, man, let's do it. So great parking.
Yeah. And it really does. So that's where it's at. Tickets. You can get your tickets as they're available at the Jam and Java website. And we hope to see you there if you're local or not.
Sounds awesome. Guys, you're welcome anytime. This was so much fun. Thank you for spending time with me. Listeners, go check out Spotify. Check out the website. I'll include their Instagram link on the show notes. We will include a link on where the show is going to be. So if you're in the area, go by, say hi, tell them Set Lusting Bruce sent you, and ask for a Bruce cover. Who knows? They might surprise you. All right. For now, I want everyone to be safe. I want them to be kind, and we'll talk to you soon. Goodbye.
Hey, baby girl, is that blood on your skin? Did it all fall apart? Did you carry their sins? Tomorrow we'll go sifting through the ashes and rain, just searching for whatever. Do 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 do.
Lean on me, sister. The moment's arrived. There's a thin line running through the city tonight. We'll have to squeeze through the vice. There's no getaway car.
To name some people who helped me keep this podcast going. They are the wonderful members of my Patreon group. I appreciate each of them. You can learn how to be a patron by going to patreon.com, look for Set Lusting Bruce, and for as little as $5 a month, you can support the podcast and get access to unedited episodes. And as little a dollar a month, you get a handwritten thank you note from me and a shout out at least once a month thanking you in an episode. So, Sean, David and Jennifer, Jeff, Sylvan, Liz, Yetta, Steve, Coach Randy, Rob, Bella, John, Betsy, Levi, Liz, Stephen, and Steve, Dale, Terry, Chris, and Mary. All of you are amazing, and thank you for being part of this wonderful group. You know I love you. There we go, another episode. I'm about to go through a couple of things where you can reach me and give me feedback. So if you want to skip this, I understand. But I do hope you check it out every once in a while. I'm available on Twitter at JesseJacksonDFW. The show is available at SetLustingBruce. You can send me an email, SetLustingBruce@gmail.com. You can send me a voicemail at 469-249-2442. I am currently doing a few other podcasts. Perfectly Good Podcast, John Hiatt from A to Z, where Sylvan Groth and I discuss every John Hiatt song in alphabetical order. My Babylon 5 podcast is Last Best Hope for Conversation, where Lou, Karen, and I discuss every episode of Babylon 5 in chronological order. I still am doing Next Stop Everywhere, the Doctor Who podcast with my brother in time, Charles Skaggs. And then finally, How Many Podcasts, the only podcast on the internet that counts, where my buddies and I discuss pop culture. You can go to our Patreon page and support the podcast for as little as $1 a month. You can go to our Facebook page, like, and please, please go to iTunes or wherever you get your podcast and leave a 5-star rating and review for all of the podcasts that I'm doing. It's okay if you don't listen to them, but if you subscribe and rate, it really will make my day better. Thank you, and I will talk to you soon.
You just heard the fun-talking, hard-rocking, music-loving, album-ranking, fan-thinking, joy-spreading, lyric-reading, story-sharing podcast that is the one, the only, Set Listing Bruce. The theme for Set Listing Bruce was written by David Rosen, used by permission.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.